Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the Revita program. I am Muhammad Baam, sitting in for Marana Muhammad Kara, who is somewhere in the bush. Marana Kara, if you do get lost or you get stuck, then you know which program to call in. It's the Revita program. You can call us and we'll try to help you out. Uncle Abdullah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mawlana Baam. Alhamdulillah, it's nice to be talking to you again. Alhamdulillah, Jazakallah once again for the opportunities, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to all our listeners out there. Unfortunately, Mawlana, you know, it's a pleasure having you, but I have to say this, you know, Mawlana Kara has launched me, and my brother Adil has launched me, but alhamdulillah, I won't launch you. We'll try and do the program as best as we can. For all those who have got any questions, any queries, anything relating to motor vehicle repairs and stuff like that, inshallah, I will try and assist with that. But as far as the valuations are concerned, unfortunately, my knowledge is extremely limited as far as that is concerned. So I am not going to try and mess anybody around. But yeah, with your technical questions, let's give it a shot, inshallah. But before I go any further, Mawlana, I would just like to say, you know, I think about 2 or 3 months ago, I gave Mawlana, myself, Mawlana Kana, had a bit of a discussion regarding and relating to the fuel. And I said to Mawlana, you know, unfortunately, we're going to see what time, especially this year, we were looking at about minimum 3 to 4 fuel increases, fuel price increases. And unfortunately, you know, the fuel price increase has been rearing its ugly head. We've been hearing it, we've been seeing it, and unfortunately, the bottom line is we've been feeling it as well. So, Mawlana, I think we did the program with you as well, and we just we spoke relating and regarding to try and save fuel, you know, with tire pressures and everything else. We've been repeating this, I think, many a times. I'm sure most of our listeners out there will be able to do this program as far as you know, trying to save fuel is concerned. So we're not going to waste much time on it. But inshallah, you know, just a very, very quick, brief recap. You know, importantly, we always say this in every program. I think almost every program we do mention, as far as the maintenance of the vehicle is concerned, that is one major factor that is going to, you know, assist in the fuel saving, you know, side of things. Also your tire pressures, your tire wear, your driving habits, you know, all these things are going to make a difference as far as that is concerned. And the other thing that I also mentioned, you know, is if there's a possibility of forming a lift club and stuff like that, inshallah, that will assist people as far as these things are concerned. And also, very importantly, we did mention that, you know, plan your trips. For example, for example, if you're going to Fordsburg, you know, you do a trip 2 or 3 times a day, you know, you plan everything and you try and make it into one trip. So with the result, you will definitely be saving some fuel, inshallah, Mawlana.
Inshallah. Uncle Abdullah, another thing that I see in that we are coming to the warmer months also, so many people will be having the air cons on. Does this also go on to the, you know, the fuel? I think it consumes the fuel much more faster.
Oh, yes, definitely. Most definitely, Mawlana. The air conditioning system on the vehicle, roughly, I would say a rough, very, very rough figure, roughly between 30% and 40% more power is absorbed from the motor as when the air conditioning system is concerned, with the older vehicles. With the newer vehicles, it might be a little less that it draws power from the engine. But obviously, aircon plays a very, very major role. It's getting warmer, I understand it's getting hot. And unfortunately, Mawlana, in our country, we have an issue as far as driving with, you know, your windows open. It's a bit of a problem, you know, because what happens is you get so easily mugged and robbed and things like that. So, Mawlana, you know, we're rather in a catch-22 situation as far as our town driving is concerned. But when you're driving out on the highways and stuff like it, most definitely your fuel economy does improve, even with the aircon on. But if you can, you know, if you can manage with the window open, it's fine. You know, it will definitely save you a fair amount of fuel. But, you know, I'm not going to go around advising people to say, you know, drive with the window open. Because, you know, I'd rather spend a couple of bucks on my fuel than to spend the hospital bills or, you know, rather be wiped out totally. Yeah. So, yeah, we are in a catch-22 situation. So it is rather difficult, Mawlana, to say, you know, drive with your window open. But, yes, air conditioning will most definitely affect the fuel consumption on your vehicle. It definitely draws on power, and yes, you're going to feel the difference, especially now, as you said, you know, in the winter months, we have this sort of problem where people bring the vehicle in, and, you know, if you look at it, it says, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, my car was giving me this kind of consumption, and all of a sudden, it's now giving me a different consumption. And, you know, you ask the brother, you know, it's kind of hot now, and he says, yeah, no, I've been using the air conditioning system. So if it, know, it is. I mean, to me, it sounds logical, but obviously for the person on the street, or you know, he doesn't expect or doesn't maybe he's not aware of the fact that yes, your air conditioning system does draw on your engine power.
Yeah.
And with the result, yes, you use more fuel, you know, because of the power, it's drawing more power, you're going to use more fuel, and yes, obviously that's going to affect your fuel consumption more.
Okay. Uncle Abdullah, I see another one is that many people say, okay, I know I need to fill oil, but how do I read the oil can?
See, Marana, very, very interesting question, very nice question. Alhamdulillah, we've been answering this particular question on an easier note as far as the oil is concerned. We used to mention, you know, the pouring rate of oil, and this is when it's cold and this is when it's hot. But the information printed on the oil container actually refers to the viscosity and the grade of the oil. You know, for example, you've got the letters API and SAE. These assure you that the oil meets the warranty standards. You know, it's actually set by the American Petroleum Institute. And obviously also involved in that, the SAE is your Society of Automotive Engineers. For example, let's take 10W30. This is obviously, as I say, it refers to the viscosity, and that is the ability to flow at different temperatures. The temperature is normally measured from about 50 through to 50. The smaller number is obviously the thinner oil. Then you get you get a W, and the W on the can actually means that the oil is suitable for winter. Look, in our country, as far as winter is concerned, we, you know, there are certain areas. I mean, one comes to mind immediately, Sutherland. I keep, you know, seeing the weather report, and up till now, they've still been running in the minus. So I suppose this is more applicable to the guys who live out there. Then you get the SF, you know, there's letters that says SF. So if you look at the S, for example, it is a suitable oil for petrol engines. Then you get the C, which is suitable for diesel engines. Obviously, the oil for higher power engines is indicated by, you know, higher letters like SH, you know, better anti-wear additive. Then you get the SG, for example. SG, very simple, you know, thing. The SG means that it's an energy-conserving means. So this basically helps you to improve fuel economy as well. Moreover, with all the said and done, you know, people are interested, alhamdulillah, they are interested in what the oil means and what it reads. But if you don't change the oil on the vehicle regularly, that is not going to help you much. You know, and I always use this example, even though it may not be my favorite, but, you know, Appa can only fry samosa so many times in the oil after she's got to get out of it. Because the oil, obviously the oil starts losing its properties, and you know, then, you know, Chacha is going to say bye, but the samosas don't taste right. But it's because the oil is old. So very similar with the car oil, if you go beyond its time, you're definitely going to have problems and issues with the vehicle, because what happens is, for example, in nowadays vehicles, you've got hydraulic tappets, all those things. You know, they really need to be working smoothly, easily with the oil. Otherwise, you don't have enough pressure in the system, and you're going to have excessive wear on the moving components in the vehicle. I mean, I've had a guy who skipped two services, and the engine was gone.
Yeah.
So it obviously it's ridiculous. Two services may cost you. It was a VW Polo. I say let's be ridiculous. It costs you $5,000 to do you know those two services. Engine overhaul is going to cost you about $20,000. So you know the choice is obviously yours. But you know you've got to service your car regularly. So that oil is not something that lasts for life. Yes, you do get certain oils in certain components of the vehicle that they say last for life, especially like when Mercedes-Benz came out, they used the oil in their differential. And they used the vegetable oil, which they said was lifetime. Thereafter, they came back and said, no, you know what, it's better to replace it at certain times. So, you know, it is very, very important that you do all your oils, replacements, checks. All these things are very, very important. Reading the oil can is also very important, so you know what sort of oil you're using. And also very important that when you take your vehicle in for a service, and if you do have an issue where your vehicle is using oil in between services, that means it's got a bit of wear and tear on the vehicle, which is also within spec. But you need to ask your mechanic, what sort of oil are you using? So because it's important and it's good to use the very same oil or a very close similar oil to do a top-up. you know, you can't just go and take lawnmower oil and put it into your car, because that's not going to work for you. So yeah, it's important what oils you use, what services you do, how you get your, you know, the oil that's been used, especially, you know, you have the right to request when you take your vehicle in that I want this sort of oil or that sort of oil. And very importantly, if you look at, like we mention always, your handbook in the vehicle, it's not there as a piece of curio. It is there with information. It is there to educate you. You know, take the book out sometimes. Have a look at it. See what the specifications are, what the requirements are, you know, as far as your vehicle is concerned. The other thing that it can also make you a little bit savvy as far as your services are concerned, you know. For example, you take your vehicle in for a service and the guy says he's used 7 liters of oil in your car. And it will actually tell you in your owner's handbook on the technical side of it that your vehicle uses 5 liters of oil in the sump. You can ask the guy, hey, but you know what? The car's supposed to take 5. Why are you charging me for 7? So these sort of things, you know, it'll make you a bit savvy, it'll make you a bit smart regarding your vehicle. You'll have some idea as to what to do. You know, we get a lot of times people call in and say, by, you know, antifreeze, how should antifreeze be used? What should be the, you know, the mixture level of your antifreeze? And if you look at your owner's handbook, it will tell you what your water capacity should be for your vehicle. It's probably about 9 liters or so. And if it's 9 liters, then all you've got to do is, you know, just go in and put in a minimum of 3 liters of antifreeze, and the rest of it can put water in. So these sort of things will make you a little bit savvy, and especially with today's times, Molana, with everything being so costly, so ridiculous, you know, the every little part or every little component you're going for now has got some sort of ridiculous price tag on it. So yeah, I think it's important that we sort of look a little bit more deeper into our vehicles. We will save a couple of bucks as far as the maintenance is concerned. We'll save some bucks as far as the consumption or rather the economy of the vehicle is concerned. So it's important. Go out, read as much as you can about your car, and that will make you a little more savvy.
Gee, Claudio, another question that comes in. Someone said that I have a very antique car.
Uh-huh.
How often do I need to use my car to prevent battery death on this car?
Very antique. Normally, most guys, you know, they get a bit smart on a Sunday morning, put on that special cap of theirs. If it's an open top, or even if it's a closed top, it's an empty car, the guys put on a little bit of a, you know, a smart cap and hat and wash the car out clean and go around the block for a spin just to, you know, get the car going, which is a very, very good habit you can do with that. You know, I would have thought from personal sort of experience, at least once in 2 weeks, you know, take the vehicle out, take it for a bit of a drive. You may not make the mileage up or whatever, but yes, you will sort of prevent some battery death in the vehicle. The other thing is what happens, remember something, is certain components in the vehicle, if stood for a long time, could result in early seizure as far as those components are concerned. So it is very important, yes, you do take your vehicle for a spin at least once in 2 weeks. The other thing also a lot of people tend to do is, you know, the car's been standing for 5 years, I hardly use it. Important thing, coming back to the oil again, remember something, once the oil is in the motor, there is some sort of contamination as far as, you know, fuel is concerned. You know, you're gonna get some fuel vapor going into the oil as well, and that also contaminates your oil, and the oil starts losing its properties. So with the result, yes, you know, that's why you will see most motor manufacturers, or I would say rather all motor manufacturers, would suggest that you either do, like today, for example, if you look at most motor vehicles, they've got a service interval of 15,000 kilometers or 1 year. It's, you know, you should do at least a yearly oil change on a vehicle, be it an antique vehicle, be it a newer vehicle, be it whatever it is. If you don't make up the mileage of 15,000 kilometers, then it is a very, very good habit. And I would suggest, I would say rather, it's a must that you do a oil change at least once a year. Then again, also the other very important thing that comes into play as far as these antiques are concerned, not only the antiques, but, you know, all vehicles, I would suggest is, you know, every 2 years you do a brake fluid change. Because brake fluid also, even though it may be in a cap, in a container, or whatever it is, but it does draw some sort of moisture from the air and also loses its properties. Or every time you brake the you know, use your brakes, the brake fluid also heats up within the caliper, itself, and with the result also it tends to lose its properties. So that also very important that you do at least a breakthrough change every 2 to 3 years. I would suggest more 2 years than 3 years, because if you look at antiques, most of the time they're just driven around the block. You don't do any long distances with the vehicle. So yeah, the more stop start you do with your vehicle, then I would suggest you up your maintenance, or you rather bring down your maintenance period, to a shorter, like for example, I would say 10,000 kilometers. If you do a lot more stop start, that's why you'll have in your service book, if you look at your service book, it says, you know, severe conditions and normal conditions. So obviously, you know, you can assess from yourself how much you use your vehicle in the short distances, because I wouldn't say that it's actually a killer, but the short distances is what more, affects the oils, the brake fluids and all these sort of things in the vehicle. The other thing also, antifreeze, we speak about it regularly. I think between 3 to 5 years, suggested that the antifreeze should be replaced, the system in the cooling system, because all these things also tend to lose their properties. There might not be a expiry date on the container or something like that, but you should keep a little bit of tabs on your own on the vehicle. It's not just get in, drive, and when it gets stuck, phone the mechanic. You could prevent these sort of things. You could prevent major expenses on a vehicle if you do all these kind of maintenance.
Gee, another question that has come in. Good luck. This person says, I want to buy a car, but I want to know which is the most reliable and cheapest to fix cars on the road.
See, Malana, very, 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 very good question. But the answer on that is rather difficult. But I think we've discussed this a little bit on our previous occasions. What I would suggest is first and foremost, the person that wants to buy the car needs to know what they want to use the car for. You know, whether you're going to use it on long distance, whether you want it for a family car, whether you're going to do short distances, just running around town, running kids to school, or is it for university purposes. Obviously, you first got to ascertain or determine as to what the purpose or what you want to use the vehicle for. If once you've come up with some sort of, I would say conclusion within yourself that this is what I want to do, maybe for example I want to drive to university, then I would look at one of these smaller vehicles. I'm not punting any brand right now, but it's just something that comes to mind is your Hyundai i10, i20, one of your Kia Picantos, or Honda Jazz, something like those sort of small vehicles. You don't go and buy a 5 series BMW to travel to university, unless of course you have the finances and you don't ask questions regarding economy on the vehicle. As far as maintenance is concerned, if you put most of your vehicles in their sort of categories, small vehicle, medium vehicle, and bigger luxury vehicles, they all sort of tend to average out as far as maintenance costs are concerned. There are certain components in certain vehicles that might cost a little more than the other components. But it's a very, very difficult question to answer. And alhamdulillah, we as Muslims know, very, very importantly, is istikhara. You've made up your mind that, I would like to buy a car. This is the purpose. And obviously, if you get guidance from Allah, then I don't think you're going to go wrong with anything like that. And obviously, you are right in asking the question to us, because Allah Ta'ala has given us also some knowledge regarding these sort of things. As I said, you've got to ascertain and determine as to what the purpose of the vehicle is. Brother Adil might differ from what I would say, but my personal preference is if I'm driving around town, mostly short distances, then I would look at a petrol vehicle, where I find that to be more economical for me. And on long distances, I find, yes, the diesel vehicle is a lot more economical, on the long distances. So that is my personal preference. But generally, as I say, in today's times, most of the vehicles do even out as far as the maintenance are concerned. But the other thing, my personal preference again is more of the recommended brands or I would say well-known brands. As far as it's concerned, this is again personal, not something to do with the radio station or any other person's opinion. I tend to avoid the Chinese vehicles and stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but it's just a personal preference. So please, guys, don't put me in and say you heard this in the radio. This guy says you mustn't buy a Chinese vehicle.
Uncle Bilok, as you were talking, I just went to go Google it. It says, amongst automakers, Toyota and Honda lead the list of cars and trucks for which the fewest number of check engine repairs were necessary, with Nissan, Audi and VW rounding off the top five performing brands in this regard. And Hyundai models boast the cheapest check engine repair cost at an average of about $318. Another question comes in that they say that a few years back, I know when I asked my father-in-law also about buying a car, he says no, don't buy Hyundai and those cars because parts are very difficult to find. Is that still the case?
No. I must be honest with you. You know, I think I mentioned this about two years ago on the very radio station. You know, Hyundai, Kia, they've actually taken Europe by storm. You know, if you look at, I think my discussion with Monakara last week or the week before that, was Kia has come up as one of the top 10 vehicles for vehicle of the year, the Kia Picanto. So, you know, as far as these vehicles are concerned, not necessarily very cheap, not necessarily very expensive, but yes, they tend to do the job quite well. I mean, if you look at our roads today, you'll find so many Kia vehicles, you'll find so many Hyundai vehicles. If you look at the Hyundai, you know, and the Kia Buckies, the 2.7 diesels, the H100, you know, all these vehicles, I mean, they're popular on the road. If they were not that popular, and if they were not that, you know, look, obviously, you know, I'm not going to say all cars are 100% perfect. You might get a bad egg in the in the whole lot. So it's not necessarily the manufacturer that you can blame for the particular thing. As far as Honda is concerned, I mean, I've always been an absolute fan of Honda's fantastic vehicle. People have this misconception because Honda used to be, you know, well, it was in the same stable as Mercedes-Benz. Back in the day, Mercedes-Benz was, I wouldn't say backing it, but they were marketing Honda until Honda moved out onto their own. And I've always found from day one, as far as Honda is concerned, they've always been a brilliant vehicle, reliable vehicle. Look, there are certain components that are expensive, but if you, for example, if you look at Johannesburg, if you're looking for second-hand components on a Honda, the guys don't have it. And you know, you ask the scrap guy, well, why don't you guys? He says, no, we don't need to sell these parts because I don't know. These parts, they don't simply sell. I recall back in the day in 1985, I'm talking about when I started as a mechanic in 1985, Baker's Biscuits bought a whole fleet of Hondas. Those years, it was that little box-shaped Honda, the 1300. And all those reps managed to do 500,000 kilometers on those little vehicles. So, you know, it's a phenomenal vehicle. I personally got a 7-seater Honda. I'm currently sitting at 350,000 kilometers in that vehicle, and it's not using oil still. Alhamdulillah. Look, there might be certain components that are difficult to come by. It might be a little bit expensive, but if you look at all your vehicles across the board, you're going to have these sort of things. So, generally, alhamdulillah, you know, as I say, stick to the major brands, things you know, and also importantly, ask questions to people who drive these vehicles. They will be able to help you. Okay, as far as the Honda Jazz is concerned, alhamdulillah, since its launch, I've only had one guy that was unhappy with it. You know, but the rest of the guys were quite happy. So I'm not punting Honda either, but yes, very, very nice vehicle. I've always been addressing. Nissan underrated currently in the country. Also very, very, very nice vehicle. The all the Nissans that have come out. So, yeah. And they also, as I say, they even out as far as the cost factor is concerned, the maintenance factor is concerned. But unfortunately, if you look at everything in the country, no, be it your bread and milk, you'll find that the prices have gone up. And unfortunately, this is how it is. So, gee, Manana, the choice is obviously yours, but like I say, you know, all vehicles are relatively good, and ask the people that are driving them.
Another question, I was told that I need to service my gearbox. When and how?
Manana, I'm not going to service your gearbox, but I'm going to service the car's gearbox if I need to. You know, it is a good question, very, very good question, very important question. And I find that, I don't know if it's due to negligence or lack of knowledge or whatever the case may be, but in most instances, this again comes in khudkop or jirkop, We think we're buying cheap, but we're actually buying expensive. Take a vehicle to someone who doesn't have sufficient knowledge regarding the vehicle or servicing of the vehicle, and you have a service done, and you find the guy, he hasn't looked at the gearbox also. Forget the oil, but forget he doesn't even look at the level of the oil in the gearbox, which is very, very important. Gearbox oil should only be short if there is a leak within the gearbox, because basically what is there in the manual gearboxes, the gearbox oil is there for a lubricating purposes and obviously for a noise level purposes to reduce the oil the noise level, and also it keeps it cool to a certain extent. Coming to the automatic gearboxes, here is very, very important. Also, you will only top up oil if the oil is short. But then again, if you look at the automatic gearboxes, the oil is there for a pressure purpose. The automatic gearbox is basically a hydraulic gearbox. Hydraulic in the sense that it uses oil pressure to do shift through gears and those sort of stuff. So also very, very important, to make sure that the oil is correct. Firstly, the other thing is, yes, servicing of the gearbox itself. Coming back to the servicing of the gearbox itself, I suggest, and this is also once again my opinion, and I have found it that a lot of manufacturers do recommend that it is done this way. Every 60,000 kilometers, be it manual, be it automatic, you must replace that gearbox oil. Because once it loses its properties again, like we say, then you're going to have issues as far as changing is concerned. Or noise levels in the gearbox is concerned. In the manual gearboxes, you find when there's lack of oil change in the manual gearboxes, the bearings tend to pack up, and obviously you end up with reconditioning those gearboxes. Coming back to the automatic gearboxes, very, very important, they have a filter in there. A lot of times, you might get someone change the gearbox oil, but don't replace the gearbox filter. The filters cost roughly $200-$300. It's very, very important that you do replace the filter. It's there for a purpose, to keep the oil clean, and if there's any, due to wear and tear, there is some sort of loose particles moving around in the gearbox, this will get trapped into the filter, and obviously eventually the filter will clog up, and you will have, transmission problems, and with the result, automatic transmissions are rather expensive today. If you look at, basically they start on repairs, roughly about 10,000-15,000 rand to repair those things. And, not everybody, I'm not undermining anyone's financial situation, but not everybody has that 15,000 laying around to recondition a automatic gearbox. As they go up to 30, 40, 50, we've even heard of gearboxes being reconditioned at about 60,000-70,000 then, which is rather a ridiculous figure. But unfortunately, if the people don't have their gearboxes serviced, that's why I say it's very important to ask your mechanic or to check on your own, make a little diary of your vehicle. I see a lot of, alhamdulillah, I've got a good few clients that do this regularly. Every time whatever was done on the vehicle, you give them an invoice, they make a note of it. When they come for the next service, they recall, hey, this needs to be done, that needs to be done. So very importantly, if you're within 60, 120, 180,000 kilometers, because, I'm sure we all know our math, if we had to call it, count payout, and it's going to be very easy. So 6, 12, 18, 60,000, 120,000, 180,000. You got to do gearbox oil change or complete service as far as the automatic transmissions are concerned. And with the result, inshallah, you will have longer life out of your transmission and less hassle. And you'll have, rather we say, hassle-free motoring, inshallah. So, yeah, very, very good question as far as that is concerned as well. And also we talk regularly on this thing as far as the cam belts are concerned. And alhamdulillah, I think it has taken some effect, because we have had some clients that came through and said, "But we've heard on the station that you guys said my cam belt must be replaced every 100,000. So yeah, it's actually a good thing that people are listening, and I think they are taking heed as well, because now with the prices of everything, I think it's affecting the guys' pockets more.
Gee. Another question comes, Moana, I went to buy a car, I saw it very cheap. However, he told me it's code 2. What's the difference between a code 2, code 3, and all these things?
See, Moana, differences between the codes. You get a code 2, which was a stolen and recovered vehicle. I think if I stand, I stand the correction between code 2 and code 3. Mm. I know the 1 is, a vehicle that that was stolen and recovered. Obviously, this vehicle has got police numbers on there. And unfortunately, due to the system, I'm not going to blame the country or anything for that, but the system in the country, sometimes it's slow, sometimes whatever the issues they have, due to admin issues, a lot of times these vehicles are not cleared correctly on the system. And with the result, when you stopped at the roadblock, you'll find that, they want to confiscate your vehicle, because what happens is it's not reflecting on your system that it has been, stolen and recovered. The other thing is, as far as those vehicles are concerned, the code 2 and code 3, well, the other one is where the vehicle was totally written off or scrapped, and, it was rebuilt thereafter. Both these vehicles, I personally, both these type of vehicles, I would keep away from personally, Morana. Firstly, because of the admin issues that are with it, if it's not cleared of the system or some stuff like that, then you're definitely going to have a problem. You could be living in Johannesburg, driving down in Cape Town, and if you get caught up there, something like that, it's going to be rather, a nasty sort of setup where you'll have to make arrangements to get back home without a car and all these sort of things. So, yeah, that is one of the reasons. The other reason is I find that the resale value on these sort of motor vehicles is not much. People are not so ready or so prepared to buy these sort of vehicles. And unfortunately, there are those unscrupulous people out there who sell these vehicles, divulging this sort of information to people. And obviously, there are those unfortunate people who are vulnerable and fall for these sort of tricks and sweet talks and stuff like that. So it's very, very important. You can go for an AA test. I'm not too sure. I think they charge roughly about $300 or something like that. They do all the tests for you and give you some sort of idea as to what the condition of the vehicle is, as well as they give you an idea the status of the vehicle is concerned. So it's very, very important that I think we should, check this out. Spend that couple of bucks. Take it to your mechanic down the road. Let him look at the vehicle for you. And if he is suspicious of anything, then you take it further. You can do some sort of police clearances and things like that. And the other very, very important point that I want to point out, Morana, is, we're so prepared to buy a car. And the guy says, I'm prepared to sell you this car as footstoots. You sign on the dotted line, you're signing it away. Footstoots means you're buying it as is. I think I'm not 200% clued up or knowledgeable as far as the Consumer Protection Act is concerned, but I think it has something in there regarding footstoots. So check that act out as well, because if you buy it from a dealership, you can return the vehicle within certain time if faults were not disclosed to you and these sort of things. And I find it rather difficult, extremely difficult nowadays to buy a used vehicle, because unfortunately people are not prepared to divulge or disclose or, let out, whatever issues the vehicle has. Everything is, no, it's in good condition. In fact, I had someone brought a vehicle to me for checking up. And so I looked at the vehicle, I looked in the bonnet, and I could see for myself there were one or two components as far as the air conditioning is missing. Mm-hmm. So the air conditioning system could never work. So I didn't go into the vehicle, and I asked the brother, and I said to him, "Bye, how's the air conditioning?" He says, "It's perfect. It works beautiful." I said to him, "Bye, can I be honest with you? This air conditioning can never be working because it doesn't have a pipe from the compressor with gas in it. How could this thing ever work? It's impossible. Even a miracle won't make it work." "Oh, but you know what? I didn't test it." You know, unfortunately, as I say, there are these unscrupulous people that are out there. And the other thing, is something that has been going on for a very, very long time. I don't see any other way of having any preventative measure regarding these things or actual real checkup. But yes, you can phone the, if you get hold of the number plate and phone the dealer or something like that. The actual, like, for example, Mercedes-Benz or Nissan or Toyota or Honda, they might have information. But the mileages that are being turned down, You know, I mean, I took someone not too long ago to go and have a look at a Nissan Sentra. We went up to the vehicle. I had a look at it. Alhamdulillah, Allah has given us some knowledge regarding these sort of things. I looked at the vehicle, and it was impossible for this vehicle to have under 100,000 kilometers. And I walked around the vehicle, and I found in one little corner in the bonnet there was a sticker, and the cam belt had been changed 2 years ago at 100,000 kilometers, and the vehicle had under 100,000 at the clock now. So, you know, there are those guys out there. There are 100% those guys out there. And unfortunately, I'm not very popular as far as the used car guys are concerned. I've been chased away many a times. But you know what? This is unfortunately the way it goes. This is how it is out there. So when buying a car, be very, very vigilant. Don't just look at the car and say, no, I like this car. My heart is in this car, and buy the car. I was reading an article the other day regarding also buying a car at night. You shouldn't buy a car at night because you're not going to see anything properly. Your paintwork, for example, all these things are not going to be showing. So please, if you don't have you know, enough technical know-how as far as buying a car is concerned, don't just go and buy a car. Don't get fooled. And also, you know, people, the prices, if you look at the price of the vehicle, it should tell you something about the vehicle. If a vehicle is in a good condition, no one's going to give it away for nothing.
Okay. We've come now to exactly 3 minutes before the hour. I think we can close up there today.
I must actually say, Mark, you know, I do too much of talking. Kara normally busts in to stop me a little bit, hold me down. But alhamdulillah, you know, we're trying to help the people out there, inshallah. I hope we have benefited somebody out there. If we have even benefited one person, then alhamdulillah, we were successful. Mawlana, Jazakallah khairan. It is really a pleasure doing the program with you and to all our listeners out there. Unfortunately, I don't think anybody got time to call in because of my big mouth. But inshallah, if anybody has any questions, they can keep it for Mawlana Kara for next week, and we'll try and answer that, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Jazakumullah khairan once again, Mawlana. It was really a pleasure to do the program with you. Jazakumullah khairan to all our listeners out there for tuning in and listening to us. Inshallah, you have a wonderful weekend, and we request special du'as. Jazakumullah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And from myself, Muhammad Bami, and my engineer, Ismail Khan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.